Hey everybody, and welcome to the Health Tech Podcast, where we talk about everything healthcare and technology. I'm your host, James Somaru, and this is your weekly Sunday session. Good morning everybody, and happy Sunday. So for this week's Sunday session, I am joined by Sarah Tico, who's the founder and CEO of Hatsumi, and Ross O'Brien, who's the Associate Director of Innovation and Technology at Central Northwest London NHS Trust, to talk about adopting health tech innovation. And in this case, that's with VR, because Sarah and Ross have worked together in order to adopt VR technology into healthcare. So it's a fascinating discussion, and to be honest, it was just really interesting having both Sarah and Ross. Obviously, Sarah being the VR entrepreneur and the creator of the VR, and having Ross, who was the adopter of the VR into the healthcare system, into that trust, helping patients right on the ground floor. It's a really interesting playoff between the two as to how that actually happened and to all the impact that's being made right now, with some practical advice as well for anybody that's looking to do that. So hope you enjoy this conversation, guys. So Sarah and Ross, welcome to the Health Tech Podcast. How are you guys doing this morning?
Yeah, good, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well, very well. It's nice and sunny today, so I'm in a bit of a brighter mood. So what I'm going to get you to do, guys, is just briefly introduce yourselves. So I obviously know you, Sarah. We've been on a couple of podcasts and bits and bobs before, but Ross, we're sort of meeting for the first time. So why don't you guys give a brief intro to yourselves?
Hi there. My name is Sarah Tico, and I do lots of things in the world of virtual reality and healthcare. So I started my own company, Hatsumi, about 2.5 years ago now. And we're developing a tool that looks at how you can use 3D drawing in VR to communicate and help people understand the experience of pain. Alongside that, I'm also the producer on Explore Deep, a breath-controlled VR experience to help people manage their anxiety. And then I work with Ross and a bunch of people as well, kind of through my role as the healthcare lead at Mercy UK, to really think about how lots of, you know, immersive startups, researchers and healthcare practitioners all work together to think about what the future of VR and health can look like.
Amazing. You've done that intro before. Over to you, Ross.
Like Sarah, I've got quite a couple of roles, and they're mixed. One role, I'm the Associate Director of Innovation and Technology for CNWR, which is a trust in London, so we provide community and mental health services. And another role I've got is I'm the digital lead for London Talking Therapy Services, or IAPT, if you work in the NHS. My interest in VR was very much born from working in Grenfell. So I led the service that responded to the Grenfell Tower fire, and we used VR there to kind of engage the community and to start conversations about really a tough subject matter in terms of trauma and bereavement and how people are affected by the fire. So my kind of route into VR was there, and has grown exponentially over the course of the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I imagine obviously getting into it from something like that, and you must have seen a real sort of positive effect of it, quite, you know, very, very close to the ground floor in with that experience, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the early days following Grenfell, we really, really struggled to engage the community, because there was kind of a fear of authority, and there were a hell of a lot of different agencies trying to talk to the community at that time. And we found that our kind of traditional NHS methods of engaging the community in mental health services, which are giving away pens or offering people leaflets about why don't we talk about depression and anxiety, or, you know, that kind of thing, didn't really yield any results, especially in that environment. And I laugh because it's obvious, right? But when we started to use VR headsets to go out in the community and just give people the opportunity to use it for the first time, it really, really changed our instantaneously changed the relationship between the clinician and the public. And we just found that it was a brilliant way to engage people, and it kind of went on from there.
I suppose it's easy to engage people with VR because it's cool, right? I mean, Sarah, you must see that in your work, that you know I suppose giving people the opportunity to use VR, they jump at the chance, right? Especially when you're saying that you might be able to reduce their pain and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes I'm a bit cautious of the cool factor of it, because just because things new and exciting doesn't necessarily mean that it's good. But I think the fact that it's fun is very important, when actually a lot of engaging in your health isn't very fun. Like, it's very hard to motivate people to continue to do their physiotherapy or learning how to meditate. I mean, I've been diagnosed with ADHD, and I like the idea of trying to learn how to meditate is a nightmare. But actually, through making something playful and exciting and motivating people, I mean, that's a very small part of it. But, and again, with like taboo subjects, talking about mental health or end of life, is really difficult. And so I think by having this as a new tool, and the fact that it can be incredibly valuable in various mental health therapies, like you mentioned, that it can actually like reduce people's pain significantly. Like, why would you choose to give people, you know, addictive opioids when you could actually, you know, think about how you can use VR? And I guess it's also bringing this more holistic approach to understanding health as well. And I think how lots of this also fits into the sort of social prescribing model as well, of thinking about the fact that, yeah, there are other ways of supporting people that isn't just medical intervention.
VR is an interesting one for me for a few of those reasons. It seems to me at the moment that VR's kind of, it's not mainstream in terms of, we're going to offer you this VR therapy or a drug or something. It's not held at that regard yet, but it's certainly getting there quickly. It seems that there's a growing evidence base. There's a lot more startups. There's arguably scale-ups, the likes of Oxford VR and people raising from Optum and you know, Optum Ventures and things like that. It seems to me that there is this swell of not only enthusiasm, but actually evidence behind VR. And it seems to be that there's actually a community of people, I suppose like yourself, Ross, that's coming from the healthcare world, that's actually saying, you know what, we're ready to adopt this. Not only the entrepreneurs are ready to build it, but it seems like the demand side is ready to start adopting it. Is that how you guys see the ecosystem? I'm interested as players in it, how you kind of feel about that ecosystem at the moment and how it's sort of made up.
I think it's fair to say it's still in its infancy. I think if you were fresh into VR as a clinician or as a manager in the NHS, you wouldn't really know where to go. And I think me and Sarah are passionate around creating a framework so people know where to go, so that there are the organisations and the companies and the startups and the clinicians that are doing really exciting things in VR at the moment are kind of showcased more. We know of some fantastic work that's going on all over the UK, literally in every corner. But I think sometimes what we do is we celebrate that work and we celebrate the individuals who are leading it. And then at the end of that celebration, everything kind of stops and goes back to normal. And for me, we need a clear strategy. We need a framework for organisations to sell onto, and for the NHS and healthcare bodies to buy off. And we need to kind of know who's doing good work and what areas we should be focusing in on as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I guess it's interesting that Ross and I come from very different worlds in how we first became interested. Because initially, I wanted to do a small art project about psychosis and mental health, and kind of using VR as this sort of storytelling tool that could, you know, be a way of like engaging the public in different conversations about mental health, and then sort of accidentally discovered how it could be used therapeutically, and ended up doing some work over at Stanford University in the US, and they had in their psychiatry department, they had an immersive consortium. It was this way of sort of bringing together people from the university, people from industry, and then there's a hospital attached, so sort of healthcare practitioners there as well. And it was just this great way of sort of getting people in the same room and really sort of sharing updates on what was going on, you know, being able to, yeah, just stay connected across those different industries. And so I started to think about doing a PhD, and this art project turned into about something a bit more scientific, and then decided to start as a company. So it was sort of coming back to the UK and speaking to other VR healthcare startups and being like, what does this even mean? Like, how is this even possible? And like, is this completely mad? And this was a couple of years ago now, and everyone was like, well, just don't expect to have like make any money or have any success or really let it go anywhere, because, you know, we're all just like banging our heads at the door of the NHS. And not only are we trying to develop the technology and be able to put it through trials, but also, you know, you're thinking about how to work with these big hardware companies. How do we even think about things like cybersecurity and the fact that these are, you know, tools that can gather a lot of like potentially very valuable data. But when you think about organizations like Facebook that are basically, you know, the leading developers of VR headsets worldwide, and how troubling their sort of approach to maintaining user data security, I think is quite problematic. So I think finding a way that we can sort of get everyone in the same room and thinking about this whole sort of pipeline from people coming up with smaller ideas to how we work with these big companies and how we can work with the games industry as well. You know, obviously healthcare is quite limited in the access to funds sometimes and the resources, but I think thinking about how we can collaborate with the people that have the skills and the tools as well to again make things that are really compelling and engaging, and sort of having this very interdisciplinary approach to how things are made and distributed.
You know, it's funny, on this podcast, we've had a few entrepreneurs in VR like yourself. And I think, you know, even on this podcast, I'm certainly guilty of weighting health tech and whatever that means towards entrepreneurship and things like that. I think, you know, having someone like yourself, Ross, on here, I think is really important, because not only it doesn't just take entrepreneurs building good products to change healthcare at all. There is actually an entire industry that needs to surround this. Not only the people that are going to adopt it and bring it in, but as you've just alluded to, there's actually, if we're going to make this work, if we're going to actually get this to work for patients, it needs academia. It needs those people on the demand side adopting it. It needs regulators. It needs all of those things to actually solidify the rules and get everybody playing by the right rules to then, as you kind of alluded to, Ross, give people a place to start, which give them a framework in which to operate, to then give them freedom. And I think for the people listening, I suppose, you don't have to be an entrepreneur to make a difference and bring VR into healthcare. You can be a jobbing nurse, doctor, physiotherapist, whatever it is, to start looking into this to then make a change. I mean, Ross, from your point of view, what would your advice be to people on that healthcare side, the clinicians, the managers, the people that can visualize a different world through VR right now? How would you, you know, what advice would you give them to allow them to get started?
Well, so our journey using VR in the NHS was really, really interesting. So as I said, we kind of took VR out into the streets, into the community, and literally used it as a tool to engage people. But one of the things that I was really, really conscious of was also a hearts and minds approach. The first time I used VR, I just thought, I was about to swear, but I thought this is brilliant. I was really, really enthused by it. But I knew that unless other people had tried it, they weren't going to be in the same mindset. And a lot of time in the NHS, when you talk about something something new, when you talk about a digital therapeutic or a digital technology, the first thing somebody will say to you is, where's the evidence base? And you're kind of like, it's innovation. There's unlikely to be an evidence base, but still that's kind of the starting block. So for me, and I think the way we've been successful in the adoption inside the NHS is also not just to concentrate on being outwards focusing, but to concentrate on what's within your staff group. So the company that we worked with, the Fred company led by Rosie Collins, we did a piece of joint work whereby we gave the headsets to the clinicians. We spent time with the clinicians looking at their well-being, and we simply said, have a headset, take it away for a week, have a look around VR, see what works for you, because then what we knew that as soon as we gave a headset to somebody, they would also be really, really enthused and kind of bring that back into the workplace. And I think one of the best discoveries for me was that the people that I thought were least likely to adopt and to do something were actually the people that grabbed it. And so I always recall there's one clinician, slightly older than the other clinicians, by her own admission, she said, there's not a chance, technology, no way, I'm not going to do it. She now runs VR outreach programs with older adults. So she's taking the headsets from me and going and doing sessions with the older adults. And I'm like, amazing. This is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. So I think for me, it's around getting the tech into people's hands, letting them explore it for themselves, but also, you know, having that approach whereby we were interested in the staff well-being as well as the population well-being. And what a great tool to be able to do something.
For those people, what really practically speaking now, you know, I'm a nurse on a ward. I've got an idea that VR could be used to help me and or my patients for something. What is the first step that I take?
Yeah, that's the thing. At the moment, there's not a kind of a framework or a guidance piece around it. So we very much felt our way through it. So we looked at other therapeutics that had been adopted. Considerations are around, is it a medical device? And you need to be quite clear what you're using it for. We came across issues like actually purchasing the hardware. It's not on the NHS framework. So we were finding inventive ways to actually get the kit in the first place. I think for me, it's about finding a good partner that's able to understands the NHS a little bit and how it works. But I think personally, there's a lot of trust that goes into from the NHS side and the organisation outside the NHS. They need to kind of trust each other a lot, and you need to have a common goal in terms of if you're looking to improve the quality of people's lives, if you're both working in that direction, then other things should fall into place. But I think the piece of work that me and Sarah are doing at the moment is trying to influence the NHS to start to think about an NHS-wide strategy. And I don't want to steal Sarah's thunder with this, because she's been the person that's really been kind of like leading it in terms of how we do that. But that's a lot of the work that we've been doing in the last months and years, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess, you know, we've kind of been doing it together for like quite some time now. And I think it's been interesting, like, seeing who gets excited by this, because a lot of this came out of sort of roundtable discussions that we've been running through Immerse UK around and sort of opportunities and barriers. And ultimately, it just comes down to these questions of how are these things distributed? How are they adopted? How is this sort of strategy? But there's a lot of interest, and there are lots of organisations out there that are already doing quite a lot of work. So I think it's really about connecting connecting all those people, making sure that we don't all exist in our silos, and ultimately see how we can work with the NHS to create this strategy. Because already organisations like Health Education England have done a lot in their sort of immersive training. They've been working really closely with a series of hospitals across the UK. Alderhay Hospital in Liverpool were doing some amazing work. Torbay Hospital down in Torquay. But they're also, again, connecting with universities, and hardware and software companies as well. And so I think it's just, you know, really how we do this sort of joined up thinking. Again, places like Story Features Academy, that's much more of a sort of immersive storytelling organization as part of Raw Holloway, then they've been running a program in collaboration with Nesta, with these immersive mental health fellowships, where they're partnering SMEs with psychologists to start thinking about, you know, developing these sort of tools. And then on an international level, there's organizations like the International VR Healthcare Association that Ross and I have been working closely with as well, and the XR Safety Initiative, who have also established their medical advisory council as well. So we're at this exciting moment where it's like everyone's starting to meet each other, and we're starting to think about interoperability and accessibility, and it's really exciting. And just to add as well, very briefly, to I think people that are interested as well, because I'm now learning the challenges sometimes of working with big organisations like the NHS. But I think just even like in terms of finding out a bit more, I think there's a big distinction between, you know, these clinically validated, you know, VR experiences that startups are creating that can be quite tough to get your hands on, but also like things that already exist and are out there that can already be used. So like the work that Ross was doing with the Fred company, Rosie Collins at Grenfell, and you guys were using like existing like sort of arts and games based VR experiences, right? And I think there's something wonderful about just like getting a headset, like the Oculus Quest is probably the most affordable and the most enjoyable to use. And just downloading some of the games on there already. There's lots of really fantastic relaxation based games. So for example, there's one called Nature Treks that's already been used quite a lot in hospices and end of life. I'm actually training to be an end of life doula in my spare time. So I've been like going to, again, all these sort of like elderly women that run the end of life training, and they're like, no, not technology. And I'm like, would you like to, you know, like feed some deer in a field, or would you like to paint with water whilst floating through space? And immediately, again, everyone's like, wow, like I could use this in so many different things. Or even being able to use Google Maps VR, like thinking about, you know, especially at the moment with people that are isolated, or, you know, elderly people in care homes, and being able to take them to, you know, perhaps their hometown that they grew up in, and stand in front of, you know, their old church or something. I think that's like incredibly powerful. And thinking about the fact that you can actually take people to places that they couldn't go probably anyway, let alone now we're dealing with the pandemic.
Yeah, I think from this chat that we've had, I think the main thing that I've taken away about that VR ecosystem in healthcare is that, for me, it seems like it once was this big blurry void with so much going on, but it seems that now it's sharpening into focus. There are certain areas that are really, really coming into focus. There's the regulatory side, there's the, you know, the policy side, there's the, you know, a decent swell of startups, but also that demand side from the hospital. And I think for everybody listening in that VR community, or indeed anybody that wants to sort of jump onto this spinning Catherine wheel of the VR community, it sounds like just jump on. Find a place to jump on and just partner with somebody, ring some startups, get a device, try something out. And it seems that there is an ecosystem building where everybody wants to support each other, which is great. And I think that is certainly a positive for all of healthcare, not least because we do need alternatives to just handing pills out, certainly. If you guys could leave the audience with one thing today, what would it be?
Me, it's about not biting off more than you can chew. Finding one kind of approach, and giving it a go, and seeing what comes from that. Not being massively ambitious at the beginning in terms of I'm going to change all of mental health care with VR. Just finding one application of it and seeing where it goes. I'm sure positive things will come from it.
Love it.
Yeah, again, just like grab a headset, have a play, you know, learn about it through doing it. And there's so many fascinating people out there really, you know, spreading the good word, but also, you know, thinking about like very innovative approaches to it. And I think, you know, the things that we can learn from the games industry as well, I think is very important. And I think like thinking about those sort of cross-disciplinary collaborations will make this even more interesting.
Love it. Thanks so much for coming on, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers, James.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening and making it all the way to the end of this episode. Remember to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. And you can head to the description of this episode to follow me on all of my social media so you don't miss out on any of the latest health tech content.